Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And I'm very happy with the product that we came to. Happy that we've gotten this passed. And now I'm more interested in trying to implement it and make sure that it works for the benefit of the city of Chicago.
Hi, everybody. I'm Fran Spielman. My guest this week is Alderman Rod Sawyer, one of several city council champions of the landmark civilian police oversight ordinance that passed the city council this week. Alderman, thank you for joining us and congratulations to you. Take a bow.
Oh, thank you very much, Fran. Appreciate it.
Before we get into talking about civilian oversight, let's talk a little bit about you. You were elected alderman in 2011 by 104 votes over Fredrina Lyle. You're serving your third term. You represent the 6th Ward, which includes Chatham and Chesterfield, Englewood, Greater Grand Crossing, Park Manor, and Auburn Gresham. And you are the son of former acting mayor Eugene Sawyer. Your dad was your best friend. What lessons did you learn from Gene Sawyer, who I covered, by the way, and was among the most likable aldermen I have ever known?
Thank you, Fran. And he was. He was someone that I idolized and listened to every day. I was at his side walking around the ward as a child, and I saw how people gravitated toward him, and it really impressed me. But one of the lessons that he always taught me, they were very simple lessons. He always knew that I was the one that was interested in politics. And he always told me a couple of things. He told me, learn how to count. And in this business, counting is 26. So, you know, I always took that, and I always make sure I try to count votes when I'm involved in something that needs support. And the other big lesson he taught me was to make friends. He said, this business is about addition, not about division. So you always try to add value by making friends, because he said enemies came on their own. You didn't have to try to make enemies. They naturally came. Try to make friends.
Yeah. And that's why your dad was close to Ed Burke. He played cards at Edward Doliak's house, and that's part of the reason why your dad was chosen by the Verdoliak 29 to serve as acting mayor after Harold Washington died in 1987. And at that infamous council meeting where Dick Mell stood on the top of his desk and shouted that Chicago had itself a mayor. How did that close relationship between your dad, Burke, and Verdoliak develop? And do you have a similar relationship with Burke?
Well, I can say this. Ed Burke was one of my dad's closest friends. People, you know, even though they were aligned different politically, you know, personally, they were good friends. He was good friends with Ed Verdoliak. It is true. My mom and dad played cards over at the Verdoliak's house on a regular basis when I was a child. They talked on a regular basis. And again, even though they were politically not aligned, specifically during that time, they always maintain the friendship. And one of the last people my dad ever saw before he passed away was Ed Burke. And as it relates to my relationship with Ed Burke, it's very good. He is someone that had taken me under his wing when I first came in and assisted me on various levels, added me to ordinances that he worked on, and we worked on together. So I consider him a friend and someone that I can always look to for advice.
And what advice has he given you?
Well, to the few times that I've sought advice from him, he just told me to work your numbers. He told me the same thing my dad would tell me. you know, make sure you get around to people, talk to people, make sure that they understand what you're trying to do. Make sure you align yourself with good people and count votes. He's given me similar advice and I always appreciate it. He's never been someone that tried to steer me in the wrong direction.
Lori Lightfoot calls him Burger King Ed, and she humiliated him at the first city council meeting and has continued to do that all along. Is she wrong to do that, even though he's now indicted and involved in fighting a racketeering indictment that accuses him of using his position to benefit his law firm?
You know, I don't know much about his legal cases, except for what I read the newspaper. All I can attest to is the man that I know and the man that I've talked to over the many years that I've known him, not just in the council, but prior to that. And he's been nothing to me but a fair gentleman and a source, a sounding block for if I have ideas to bounce off. I was always able to speak with him. I wish him nothing but well in his life. That's what I can say about him.
Those relationships that your dad had with Birkin Podolyak is at least part of the reason why he was able to deliver so much of Washington's legislative agenda that got blocked during council wars, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the things that were passed during that short tenure included, you know, lights at Wrigley Field, the human rights ordinance, landmark labor agreements for police and fire and all the labor unions. You know, those things could not have been done unless there was some collaboration with my dad and the council members that existed at the time. And fortunately, my dad had those types of relationships back then where he can pass things that even Harold had some difficulty passing. He sure would have passed them in the second term had he had the opportunity, but he passed way too soon.
Your dad ran against Tim Evans for mayor in the 89 election won by Rich Daley. In the end, he was accused of being what his critics called an Uncle Tom. And you've said that he was despondent about that. It broke his heart. That must have really been hard for you to watch as his son.
Well, he was. It was very difficult. That time was a tumultuous time. My dad only wanted to best serve his people and the people in his community and the people of Chicago. And that's really all he wanted to do. And in retrospect, all my dad wanted to do in that particular time after Harold died was serve out his term. And, you know, the people that knew my dad, and you might have even known this back then, Fran, my dad was on the verge of retiring before at that point. That would have been my dad's last term serving as alderman. And he was planning on moving on with his life, you know, either going to the public sector, you know, private sector or doing something else. But he had made that, you know, people that really knew him close knew that that was his last term running as alderman. And correspondingly, when Harold unexpectedly died and he was chosen, his desire was only to serve out the term and to finish what Harold started.
And he was coached running by who?
Well, I mean, like I said, running really was not when Harold passed. I was there when Harold passed. I happened to be in the area because I was in my first year of law school at the time, and I was close by. So when I saw it up on the news, I immediately called my dad and I told him I was around the corner. So I ran over to City Hall and he was sitting there crying, and a lot of people were around him. They handed me a phone and then they drove us home. And then from that point on, I stayed at my dad's house for that entire week up until the funeral. And I was the person that answered the phones when people called. And you know, but that's when people were just telling me, you know, you're a natural choice. You should be the one that carries on Harold's legacy. But that was not the thought in his head at that time. It was, you know, his friend died. And that's what he was concentrating on. And, you know, a lot of other people were maneuvering and you know, making deals. And my dad was just sitting there literally despondent about a close friend of his passing away so suddenly. And he knew the impact of that for the city of Chicago. So eventually the conversation started turning towards, you know, him being the person that could carry on that legacy. And, you know, it just happened. It was a natural flow. It was nothing that he put up. And it wasn't that he was hesitant about doing it. It was just something that was unexpected. And he was not in that mindset at that particular time. But what happened, people just kept at him and said, you know, you're the natural choice. You're the senior black member. You're chair of rules. You're also president pro tem. We know that you were a trusted voice to Harold. You know, he listened to you. And he knew that you can deliver votes. And the combination of all that just made him more of a natural choice to succeed Harold as mayor at the time.
Let's talk about civilian review, which is something you and Harry Osterman have championed for almost 6 years. Why did it take so long? And how do you feel that the baby has now been delivered?
Well, you know, it's a culmination of a lot of hard work. You know, standing with all the variety of community members, I've been to scores of meetings, and Harry and I were you know, we were on the GAPA side, and we worked at a couple years before we introduced an ordinance. I was looking at my old press clippings that were sent to me, and we worked on that very hard. And you know, we worked on it in the prior administration trying to get some agreement, didn't quite work out. We retooled and reintroduced it in the new administration, which we thought we would have some more, you know, flexibility. And that tended to be a little bit of a challenge. But we kept at it. And we brought on, especially when we merged with the CPAC group. So we then brought on Leslie Harrison and Carlos Ramirez Rosa, who have been invaluable to this process as well. It's just fulfilling that we finally got it done. Even though it took many, many years to do it. But I'm that kind of person that once I get onto something, I tend not to let go. I want to make sure that it works and take it all the way to the end. And I'm very happy with the product that we came to, happy that we've gotten this passed. And now I'm more interested in trying to implement it and make sure that it works for the benefit of the city of Chicago.
I have to believe that you forged your partnership, your unlikely partnership with Osterman, in your father's spirit of counting votes and adding and all that stuff.
And Fran, when GAPA came to, when approached me back in around 16, they had asked me to champion this ordinance that they've been working on and continually working on it at the time. I said, well, I cannot do it alone. I said, I need somebody that geographically makes sense, that I can get votes from the north side. And we were talking it through. And actually, after a couple of minutes, I said, well, you know, what about Harry Osterman? I think he's a nice guy. You know, I knew his history. I knew what kind of things he worked on. And also knew the legacy of his mother, the family legacy, who was a wonderful person that my dad was close to. So it was something that seemed like a natural fit. Although people think it was an unlikely fit, but I thought it was quite natural to have geographic representation on the north and the south side. It would give us the best chance to get the required number of votes that we needed.
Yes, so it was, your dad would be proud. And you also knew that the number, magic number, was not 26. It was 34.
It was 34. Because, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a hell of a benchmark, because you had something that implemented a new election structure.
That's correct.
The district councils. The stalemate, at least in recent months, was over who would have final say in disputes over police policy and whether the 7-member appointed commission would be empowered to take a binding no confidence vote in the superintendent. In this whole dispute, you kind of split the baby. You are able to take a vote of no confidence, the 7-member commission can, in the superintendent. It would then trigger a city council vote, which has to be by 2/3, but the mayor would not be bound by it. Why not?
That's correct.
And isn't that a problem?
No, actually it's not a problem. And if you take it through its logical conclusion, if a superintendent is doing so poorly, or they've not done their job to the extent that the public is asking for their removal, we institute a vote of no confidence and we get a 2/3 majority, we kind of figure that person's pretty much out the door anyway. I would bet dollars to donuts that person would be fired prior to us even getting to the final vote. And I think that's the kind of pressure that, and that's the community pressure. That'll be community pressure that will be placed upon the mayor to say, okay, I have to do something. I have to get rid of this person. This person's not doing their job. You know, it's about to be embarrassing. Let me go ahead and pull the trigger. And I think that would happen more likely than us going all the way through getting a vote of no confidence and presenting it to the mayor. I believe that that, you know, would be an indication, particularly from the community, that that person needs to go. And I don't think we'd ever get to that point.
Yeah, same you with don't policy. Think the mayor could ignore it. You don't think,
I don't think the mayor could ignore it at all. No.
No,
not at all. And that's why we came to that conclusion. Once we got to that point, we kind of figured that person would be gone anyway. And it's that same instance, the same with policy. Policy, let's be clear. It's a lot of front end negotiation that we put into the ordinance that encourages the superintendent and the commission to work together towards implementing policy. And that is intentional because we want people to negotiate and collaborate and continue to talk and work the problem out as it relates to policy. In the rare occasion where a final decision has to be made that may be controversial, the commission does have that say to implement that policy. And then that gives the mayor an opportunity to chime in to reject that policy.
And explain why in writing.
Yes, and explain why. And if the mayor chooses to do that, we then, as a council, have an opportunity to override that rejection with a 2/3 vote. Again, if the community feels strongly enough to say that the commission's vote is the correct vote, they will put pressure on the mayor, put pressure on us to do what they feel is right. And again, it's community driven. If the community rises up and says, hey, the commission is correct, we need you as council members to override the mayor's rejection, confirm what the commission states, and they do their job, which we know we fully expect the community to do, then we would vote the community's conscience and with a 2/3 vote, confirm the commission's decision.
And the mayor has said she doesn't think disputes will even get to that point or
I doubt, you know what? I agree. I don't think that they'll, you know, we know that other municipalities that have similar functions, they've either never got to that or got to that once or twice in their entirety of existence. So we agree with that.
There would also be 3-member district councils in each of the 22 police districts.
That's
you
correct.
Said there needs to be a recruitment process to convince people to run for these seats. What happens if people don't step up?
You know, I'm fully confident that people will rise up and want to get involved in this. We just have to make sure that people understand what, you know that this is their opportunity to really be involved in getting some collaboration with the police department. So I'm confident that people will step up and do the right thing, will come out and run for these positions at district council. They will make nominations to the final commission when the vote comes up in 2023. And I believe that we will have that spirit of collaboration that we need right now because there's, as you know, there's a real big disconnect between the community and the police department. There's no trust there. That's why we're not solving the crimes that are being committed out here because no one wants to come forward and let the police know what they know. We have to reset that and correct that. And this is one of these efforts to do just that, to reset that relationship. Let's correct that and make sure that there's a spirit of collaboration between the community and the police so that the police can do their intended job, which is to solve crime.
There will be an interim commission with members nominated by the Rules Committee. Do you
that
have in
correct.
Mind anybody who should serve? What kind of people are you looking for?
We're looking for people that are on the ground, everyday people that are willing to roll up their sleeves and work with the police, work with the community, not afraid to go out in the street and walk up and down and talk with people. So, I mean, there are no specific, and we made that was something that was very intentional. And that was part of the weekend negotiations. We did not want to put too much too many individual requirements on people. You know, people are going to submit their individual life stories, their individual resumes, and ask people to be considered, and ask the council and the mayor to be considered for these positions. But we want to hear their story. We want to hear if they have some life experiences or their connections to their community to make sure that they're adequate candidates to be part of the commission. So all it takes is some eagerness to do this, willingness to get involved, and, you know, and maybe an interesting life story that will get them over the top.
Alderman Anthony Napolitano, whose far Northwest Side ward is home to scores of police officers, and he himself is a former police officer, predicted this week that cops who already feel under siege will lay back even more because of this 12th layer of police oversight, as he put it. He has predicted crime will triple and that you'll be back in 6 months creating another panel to find out why. Aren't you worried about crime and police retirements escalating with people, even more people looking over the shoulder of cops? I mean, last month, 10 people were shot and one person was killed when a pair of shooters opened fire along a busy commercial strip in Chatham. Aren't you worried about that? And isn't crime the most pressing problem that Chicago has?
Well, crime is the most pressing problem Chicago has right now, and people are already retiring now at an increased rate, more than they've ever done before. So that problem's happening right now. So what Anthony is talking about is occurring right now. We all should be worried about it, but we also be trying to do something about it. It's happening today. So what he's talking about is happening in the future. It's already happening right now. So, yes, we're concerned about crime.
Well, how does this
crime.
Make it better, I guess, is what I'm asking.
It makes it better because we're encouraging a spirit of collaboration between the police and the community. We're not trying to divide them. We're trying to connect them. They're already divided. They're divided right now. There's a problem now. You know, and they talk about all these oversight, quote unquote, oversight agencies. Is that improving crime today? It's not. Is it making people feel safer? It's not. We have to continue to try to do something to bring the community and the police together. Everything that we've been talking about, he's trying to separate the police and the community like they're two different people. The police are part of the community. They want to go. We all want police to go home at night. I support the police. I want the police to be able to do their jobs. But I think for them to best do their jobs, they have to work with the community. They have to work with people that are here every day that could give them good information on solving crimes, which is where we're lacking right now. So, I mean, to Anthony's point, I respect him. I actually like Anthony, but I think he's totally off base in this regard. The things he's talking about is already happening. We're trying to get them to stop happening.
How is David Brown doing as police superintendent? Is he up to the job?
You know, I think he's a nice gentleman, and I think he's doing everything that he can. You know, it's just, I believe that, you know, the job is a lot. You know, it's a lot different, it sounds like, than Dallas, which I heard he did a great job down there. I would like to see a little bit more collaboration with he and our the respective aldermen. I don't have a lot of, you know, as opposed to other superintendents who I talk to regularly, I don't have much interaction with Superintendent Brown. Hardly ever talk to him. I've seen him on the street a couple of times. And again, he seems to be, you know, working hard, doing what he can. But I think that he can do a little bit better with working with like aldermen and other community members with, you know, his crime fighting efforts.
Is he still yanking cops out of your neighborhood and other neighborhoods?
Well, we've actually been pretty good with police presence in the neighborhood. Obviously, after the tragic shooting on 75th Street, we've had police pretty much all around. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily stop things from happening. And again, I don't put that on the police. I don't put, you know, criminal activity on the police. I want police to be able to solve the crimes. You know, if there's a shooting, I want them to be able to apprehend the shooter and bring them in for justice so they can be brought in to be tried. That's what the police are supposed to do. And that's what I'm expecting them to do. Focus on that and do that well.
Do you like his crime fighting strategies? He's created these roving units again. That's, you know, like reinventing the wheel. We've been here before. Is it working?
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the roving patrols. Like I'd rather have, you know, just people on the street, you know, boots on the ground kind of action. You know, these patrols, I don't know, you know, if they're working or not. I'm sure they'll give us more information as things go on, as they're implementing these patrols, but history will tell us, I don't think they work that well.
And then the numbers show that they don't. I mean, look at what goes on every weekend in Chicago, even during the week. It's a bloodbath.
Yeah, and again, like you said, I'm not necessarily putting the shootings and the criminal activity on the police, but I'm expecting them to be able to apprehend these people and bring them to justice. That's what the police are supposed to do, be able to. And in order to do that, sometimes you just have to be present. You have to be around. And I don't think we have enough policemen around. We have a lot of policemen, but they're on these roving patrols. They're hanging downtown, which, again, I'm not saying that downtown's not important. Downtown is extremely important to us all. But we need that presence out in the neighborhoods where the criminal activity is happening so that they'll be in a position to get good information and apprehend these people as quickly as possible.
In a poll done this week for Cranes and the Daily Line, Mayor Lightfoot's approval rating was 23%. That is dismal. Are you giving any thought to challenging her in 2023?
My thoughts right now are to be the best alderman that I can try to be, you know, constantly learning to improve myself and help improve my community. That's where my concentration is right now today. I have no knowledge on, you know, I have not kept up with her poll results because, you know, I've had a lot to deal with on my own. You know, Six Ward's had a lot of issues to deal with, and I'm trying to bring economic development here. We're trying to reduce crime, trying to bring opportunity to the people in the ward. That's my concentration and focus right now.
Well, but that could change, couldn't it?
You know, Fran, I can say anything can change. You know, anything can happen. I don't know what's in store for me tomorrow or the next day. But today, you know, I'm concentrating on trying to be the best alderman I can be and improve where I might be deficient and keep working on that. And making sure that I make connections with my residents and my business owners. And again, be the best that I possibly can.
During the battle over her pandemic budget, the mayor famously warned the members of the Black Caucus, don't ask me for you know what for 3 years when it comes to choosing projects for her capital plan. You yourself have criticized her tactics and her lack of collaboration. Will that be an issue for her, and has it gotten any better?
Well, I think that's one of the challenges that the mayor has right now is someone told me this, you know, there's one thing for being a bad loser. You'd never want to be a bad winner. And you want to make sure that you put your feelings aside, you know, especially when you're the victor and you've won the race. Let's move all that aside. Let's work on making things better for the city of Chicago. And I think that's where we all need to be, trying to do what we can to make Chicago better. You know, cast any differences aside and let's work on that. So I think that's something I think she's trying to continue to work on. I know that it has been a challenge. You know, either myself or talking to other people that have that similar concern. And I think that's something
that's
the
concern,
you know,
that she gloats, that she takes things too personally, that she's not collaborative enough. What is it?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, this last weekend, she's come a long way in the spirit of collaboration. So I compliment her on that. You know, we needed that extra push and we needed those couple of extra votes that she was able to provide for us to get this thing over the top. And again, I was appreciative of that. And I think that's showing that she's coming a ways from, you know, where she started when she first got into the office a couple of years ago. But I think that's something that we all, you know, that needs to be worked on. And if I was going to make a criticism or a constructive criticism, that would be I would say the collaboration portion would be something that could be worked on. And again, starting off today, last week, it was a good start.
The budget battle ahead with the $1.9 billion in stimulus money and how to spend it could be a big battle as well. Do you expect that?
I expect there's going to be a lot of vigorous conversation about that. And, you know, making sure that also that our structural deficit is controlled. And, you know, even though we have this largesse of money coming in, we have everyday problems that we have to deal with. And that includes our structural, but our deficit that we still have.
Pension obligations. Crisis.
Yeah, obviously yeah. The pension that we still have. You know, we still have to make sure that we do things that will make sure that we can reduce these debts. I was talking to a friend just last night, talking about had we done the pension obligation bond, for example, we would have been in a lot better position had we done it. This was not during the life administration. We should have done it during the Emanuel administration.
Absolutely. He wanted to do it.
And he wanted to do it. That was one of the things I agree with him. I actually agree with him. I was one of the few that agree with him on that. And I thought it was a good thing to do.
Should we do it now?
I think it might be too late now. Yeah. It was good then because way the financial climate was at that time. When I was talking to financial advisors, they said it's the ideal time to do it. Yeah. And I don't even think they would have thought that the economy would have made the kind of leaps and jumps that it did, which would have made those bonds, you know, very attractive to us right now. We would have been in a far better position. But, you know, that's speaking retrospectively. Life. So, right. Yeah, that's life, you know.
And the budget battle and the stimulus battle will also be at the same time as the REMAP battle.
That's correct.
That's going to be another tough one where Black population losses would seem to dictate a loss of Black wards. Several of them.
Yeah. Yes, but we're going to stand pat and try to maintain the 18 Black wards that we have. You know, we're going to work, you know, we had a retreat with the Black Caucus. And, you know, one of the main items on the retreat was talking about REMAP and our need to stay together and to protect one another in keeping 18 Black wards. So that was something that I'm hoping that we'll stand pat on and we not try to cannibalize each other when the process actually starts.
Yeah. Alderman Rod Sawyer, I think your dad would be very proud of you, particularly this week as you delivered and you learned how to count votes, 34 of them.
That's
congratulations
right.
Again to you. And thank you for joining us. And we will see you all next week.
Thank you, Fran. I appreciate it.